Eric Stoltz seems to have two parallel acting careers, one in Hollywood and the other in independent cinema. He first became well known through his role in the 1985 film Mask as a teenager with a deforming bone disease. More recently, he co-starred in Rob Roy as Rob Roy's trusted friend and in Little Women as Laurie's tutor. He played a heroin dealer in Pulp Fiction, directed by Quentin Tarantino, the king of independent filmmakers, and starred in the independent films Killing Zoe, Naked in New York, and Bodies Rest in Motion. Film critic Jay Hoberman dubbed Stoltz the grand old man of ambitious youth comedies. Stoltz stars in the new film Kicking and Screaming, written and directed by 25-year-old Noah Baumbach. The story is about that period of limbo between college graduation and so-called real life. Stoltz plays a 28-year-old who can't seem to stop being a student. Here he is, approached by a woman at a party.
I am so glad to find an actual adult at one of these parties. It's really just a bunch of freaked out kids, huh?
Yeah.
I'm Jocelyn.
Jocelyn? What an interesting name. I'm Chet.
Chet?
Hello.
So what do you do?
I'm a philosophy German major.
Philosophy German? I don't get it. You're not still a student, are you?
Oh, yeah. Well, technically, at least until I complete my thesis, which is becoming more and more overwhelming each year. This third tome has become quite a battle, which is odd because the second book came quite effortlessly.
How many years have you been here?
Oh, God, it'll be 10 come January. But I skipped a semester my sophomore year.
Eric Stoltz, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Now, how did you choose Kicking and Screaming?
About 3 years ago, I did a film with Mary Louise Parker called Naked in New York.
Yes, I like that film.
Thank you. She gave me this script called Fifth Year by Noah Baumbach and said, it's an amazing script. We have to do it. Your friend is producing it, Joel Castleberg. I read the script, and I was 10 years too old for any role in it. I called Mary Louise. I said, I can't do this. I'm 33 years old. I can't be in this film. Cut to 2 years later, Noah's doing the film. And I meet him, and I say, you know, I'll do a cameo or something in your film, but I'm really too old to do a role in it. And he said, fine. And I was set to do the video dealer. I go off to Scotland to do Rob Roy. And within 24 hours, I get a furious flurry of faxes from Joel Castleberg and Noah, the director, saying their lead actor had pulled out of the film to do some action film. They were going to lose the financing unless they got a name within 24 hours. Would I do it? And I faxed him back and said, well, I'd love to help you out, but there's no role for me. I'm old. I'm in my 30s. I can't play a collegiate. And Noah said, well, we'll write something for you. We'll come up with a character, a bartender or something. We'll create something on the set. And that really is an opportunity you rarely get in a feature film, to improvise and create something as you're making the film. So I agreed.
So you're the student who's been a student on the college campus for about 10 years. So you helped make up the role as you went along?
Yes. I like to look at it as the wizened bartender, moral conscious, Jiminy Cricket centered, true adult, perpetual student role.
Which is interesting for you, since I think you only spent like 2 years in college. So your background doesn't quite parallel. Yes, parallel the characters.
Well, I personally hated college, which is odd because I come from a family, a long line of educators in my family. It was only after I hit my mid-20s and I'd really traveled around the world that I felt a need to continue my education. I would love to go back to college at this point, but it's probably not going to happen.
Now, have you done a lot of films where the director was making their first movie?
I've done, it feels like, thousands of films with first-time directors. I tell you, I feel like the old whore that in a farming community that fathers bring their sons to for the first time. Get it over with Stoltz. He's painless and only costs $5.
That's really funny. Yeah. So do you end up advising the young filmmakers a lot, or just like laying back and letting them do their thing?
Well, every filmmaker is different. If they ask me for my advice, I'm more than happy to pipe in.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, if things are going dreadfully wrong, I'll say, listen, why don't we just, you know, put the camera here and do this? But generally, I tend to lay back and watch them. It's a lot of fun working with first-time directors. They're generally extremely passionate, almost annoyingly so.
No, but say a first-time director is directing you to do something that you're unsure is really going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Will you be more likely to say the first-time director than the old experienced director, I don't think this is going to work?
No, what I try and do is I try and make it work. I do it a few times
mm-hmm.
and say, is this the direction you want? And if it's clear that it's not working, then I'll say, why don't we try something else? And I'll come up with a few different ideas. I try not to be judgmental about whether or not it'll work before we've actually tried it. Because more often than not, I'm wrong, or my approach is not right.
Eric Stoltz is my guest, and he's in the new film Kicking and Screaming. Now, you were in Pulp Fiction, which it seems to me so many people are trying to make in their own way right now. It's
yeah.
like a touchstone for every young filmmaker. Mm. Now, how did you get the part in Pulp Fiction?
I'd known Quentin Tarantino for a while. We were both at the Sundance Film Festival in 91 or 92. He was with Reservoir Dogs, and I was with The Water Dance.
Oh.
And we were sort of the competition. And we met each other and really hit it off. And then I did a film that he produced called Killing Zoe. And then he acted in a film that I produced called Sleep With Me. And then he called me in to have dinner and hang out and talk about Pulp Fiction. That's really what an audition entailed for Quentin.
Now, did he have you in mind for the role that you ended up playing, or was he just feeling you out for other possibilities too?
I don't really remember that well. I think it was one of the two robed roles, as we call it. he ended up playing the other robed role, and I like to think that my robe was much more interesting color than his.
Right, these are the two suburban guys in their bathrobes. Right. Yeah, you're it's an interesting character you play because you're living in this like suburban house with a big lawn
and Christmas lights.
Yeah, and you're a heroin dealer.
Well, I think a lot of drug dealers are very middle-class, upstanding citizens.
In the film, you're married to a woman played by Rosanna Arquette, and she has, like, everything pierced, you know, her nose, her ears, her private parts. And so she's really on the edge, and you're a heroin dealer, and you just kind of, like, squabble all the time, like the stereotype of a certain kind of middle-class suburban couple, in spite of all these bohemian trappings.
Yes, that's something we wanted to make sure came across, is that even though you purport to live on the edge or have a bohemian lifestyle, when it comes to relationships, you bicker like anyone else.
There's a great scene where Travolta, after he has bought heroin from your character, Uma Thurman unknowingly, thinking it's cocaine, snorts the heroin, she ODs, and he's bringing her to your house for some help, and you're telling him to go away.
Right.
And then you decide, well, you're going to give her a shot of adrenaline to the heart
right.
to help revive her, but you have to read up on how to do it because you've never done this before, and you go frantically looking for your nursing book to find it.
Hurry up, Lance, we're losing her!
I'm looking as fast as I can!
What's he looking for?
I don't know, some book.
What are you looking for?
A little black medical book.
What are you looking for?
A little black f***ing medical book. It's like a textbook they give to nurses.
I never saw no medical book.
Well, trust me, I have one.
Well, if it's so important, why didn't you keep with the shot?
I don't know. Stop bothering me.
Listen, what are you looking for? That girl's going to die in our carpet. You're never going to find anything
Honey,
in this
I'm house. Going to kill you. No, shut
you
up.
Play this shit out.
Get in here.
Right?
Was this scene improvised at all?
No. Well, parts of it were improvised. Most of it we stuck to the script because it was such a fantastic script. But I think there were takes where I accidentally broke a window or I tripped or John and I dropped Uma, where we kept rolling and naturally improvised a few lines. But basically, we stuck to the script.
Now, two of your recent major motion picture type roles were in period movies, Little Women and Rob Roy.
Right, right.
And actually, I was surprised when I heard you were going to be in those films because there's something about you that reads so contemporary. And I guess particularly because you've been in a lot of roles in movies that are very much set in the moment, in in the now.
Right.
So how did you feel about taking period roles?
Absolutely love them.
Mm-hmm.
They're so much fun. I cannot tell you that. They're hardly ever done, for one thing. And when they're done well, like Little Women and Rob Roy, it's just a joy. It's like stepping into a history book, in the costumes, in the actual locations, doing something that you know your nieces and nephews can see and you won't get in trouble for.
Unlike
Pulp Fiction or Killing Zoe, where most of my family are not allowed to go.
Right, right. You know, it's funny for an actor such as you, who is now so associated with independent pictures. You got your start in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which was a big commercial success, big high school movie. Was this your first film?
It was indeed my very first film.
Did you think you were heading for perpetual high school roles after that?
Well, yes. Most of the 80s I spent doing quite a bit of high school roles in one way or the other. I think what I thought when we were making Fast Times was that every film would be as much fun. Literally, what you saw on the screen was one-tenth of the party that actually happened when we made that film. It was fantastic. And for a first experience, I think it really spoiled me. And sadly, not every film is as enjoyable as Fast Times was.
No, a few years later, you got a high school role that was a very different kind of role. You were the star of Mask,
right,
where you had a disease that led to fast-growing facial bones, and you were terribly disfigured in that movie.
Craniodiaphyseal dysplasia. I'm surprised you don't remember the term.
Yes, forgive me. Well, I figured acting in that, I mean, you were really good in that. Acting in that must have been like, working with one hand tied behind your back. You had no real face. I mean, the face wasn't yours outside of the eyes. Mm. So you couldn't use subtle facial expressions in the way that you could if you didn't have to wear all the makeup.
Yeah, it was bizarre then, but actually it led to something interesting, which made me think of the Greek plays, in that it was almost like I was wearing a mask. So what I had to do was compensate in terms of my vocal intonations or my bodily posture. And it was almost an exercise. How can I convey this emotion physically or tonally without my face? It was interesting.
When you were in Mask, now I read you actually walked around with the facial disfigurement makeup outside to see what kind of reactions you'd get.
Yes, I did.
What kind of reactions did you get? Did people react to you like you were disfigured or like you were walking around in a costume?
No, it looked actually like it was real as it could look. As real as it looked in the movie, it looked on the streets.
Uh-huh.
And people were quite cruel, actually. I'm sad to report that humanity really let me down. They would yell things out their car windows, or some people threw some things at me.
Wow.
It was horrific. It was absolutely horrifying, I must say.
You were surprised?
I was surprised and disappointed. And years later, when I did a film called The Water Dance, I did a similar thing. I stayed in a wheelchair for several months, and I got similar responses from people. People don't want to look at you. They ignore you, or they go overboard and are fawningly servile and polite to you. Both responses are annoying, I find. It's a curious thing.
And the responses you found helped to inform your performance in both of those films?
Yes, absolutely. I don't feel a need to do that kind of research on every role, but when it's something far from my reality, I try and do as much as possible.
Now, I recently saw you on Mad About You playing Helen Hunt's ex-boyfriend.
Yes.
I don't remember seeing you on TV before, although I do believe you've done, your share of guest roles.
Right.
What were you doing on Mad About You?
Well, I was in Scotland doing Rob Roy, and I got a fax from Helen, who is an old friend. We did...
You did Water Dance together.
We did Water Dance together. We also did Our Town on Broadway together.
Oh.
We go way back, Helen and I. And she sent me a fax in Scotland. Actually, that's how I maintain a lot of my relationships when I'm on location, is through faxing. It's a bit like letter writing, only quicker. And Helen sent me this fax, and in it she mentioned that there was a role coming up of an ex-boyfriend, and would I be interested? And I faxed her back, sure, if I'm in town, I'd love to do it. And that's how it happened. It was really a joy. I gotta say, it's such a lovely show.
Mm-hmm.
I had such a wonderful time. And Paul Reiser and I are really good friends now. So basically, my friends, who are now all hugely rich and successful television actors, fax me and say, hey, why don't you come on my show? And I oblige.
Eric Stoltz, he stars in the new film Kicking and Screaming. This is Fresh Air.